The secret to making world-class chocolate? Not losing your temper. Maine is home to one of North America's top 10 chocolatiers. The honor has been bestowed upon Kate Schaefer's Black Dinah chocolates by Dessert Professional magazine. Schaefer has written a new book about her art, her business, and her life on the isolated island community of Isle of Hoe off the coast of Stonington. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program, we'll talk with Schaefer about how she first came to Maine, set up a life on Isle of Hoe, and out of necessity, taught herself the very difficult process of making chocolates, including the challenge of creating and keeping its temper. Join the conversation. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or message us on Facebook. It's been said, a balanced diet is a chocolate in each hand. This is Maine Calling. And the phone number in a moment to join the conversation as well. Kate Schaefer, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, so we're a few days away now from Valentine's Day, which is on Tuesday, but I was surprised to read that Valentine's Day is not your busiest time of year.
Definitely not. Do you know why?
Well, it has something to do with who's buying.
Yes. The majority of gifts bought for Valentine's Day are bought by, well, men. And men are not forward-thinking when it comes to Valentine's Day.
Are you saying that they only buy on February 14th?
I think that that is statistically proven.
That's
yes,
that's probably true, and that's too late to ship. I guess
in it's some too cases. Late for us to ship. If our chocolates are in a local store, people can walk in and get them. But as far as mail order chocolates, definitely not the busiest time for us.
But it's so. There's still time now.
So yes, for New Englanders. Okay. There is. Yes.
And a little bit later, we'll get into the process of making chocolate, including how to choose chocolate and how to combine taste profiles and all of that fun stuff. And chocolate is not an easy thing to make. And it's curious. It's a curious story as to how you got there. You were not a born and bred chocolatier. It really came out of necessity.
Yes, definitely.
First of all, how did you get to Maine?
Well, I fell in love with a man who wanted to be here. Steve and I met in California, and he had moved there from Maine and wanted to come back. And so this California girl followed him.
So you land a job as a cook on Isle of Hoe. And when you came to interview for that, the proprietors asked you if you were a trained chef, and you were honest and said no, and that worked out for you.
It did. In fact, I think they really breathed a sigh of relief when I said that, which was surprising to me.
And why is that? Because one would think that if you had a classically trained chef, that's a feather in your cap if you're a restaurateur.
Yeah, I think in general, for sure, it is. Their concern was more about being able to live and operate and function on an island where there's no real outlets for anything, right. Really. I mean,
do you think it might have been frustrating for a trained chef to be able to have to cook without having the ingredients readily there?
I think that I wasn't there when they had classically trained chefs there, but I think that came up quite a lot. You don't always have exactly what you need. Sometimes what you need doesn't make the last boat at night, and you've got to really hustle trying to figure out something else. Have to be very adaptable.
Your audition meal went well. It was a black bean stew, which was a little late, but it went well, and you got the job. But you also had to adjust to a different culture.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
What did you notice about how life was on Isle of Hoe that was different?
Well, I'm from suburban California. Stucco houses and traffic lights. Isle of Hoe has a year-round population of 40 people and lots of squirrels and deer and all that stuff. It's also home to Acadia National Park, and it's quiet. It's beautiful. But I was an outsider, you know, for sure. And not that people weren't friendly. I mean, everyone was wonderful. I mean, but I'm, you know, I'm from California. I'll never be from Maine. And, you know, that's worth something.
So you continued cooking, and your husband had found means to support himself as well.
Yes.
Sort of a jack of all trades guy on the island. But then the bed and breakfast closes, and you were literally forced to rethink your career at that moment, but decided you wanted to stay on Ailaho. And therein lies the rest of the story. Tell us about how you decided to turn to chocolates.
Well, there's a lot of different ways to tell the story, but the simplest way is it popped into my head one day, and it felt right. And I sat down and talked to Steve about it, and we thought it made a lot of business sense. I didn't know anything about chocolate, but we thought that it would work. It's a very portable item. We can ship it off island. It's romantic. It has a good story with it. All those things that you need to make a good business plan other than the location.
Right.
But it's worked out.
But and you knew as someone who had experience in a kitchen that chocolate making was not the easiest of tasks.
No. In fact, when we decided to pursue this, the breadth of my experience in working with chocolate were all failures. So I'm not a goal-driven person, but if I can't figure something out, it really, really gets me.
Ah.
And so I was motivated.
To join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Our guest is Kate Schaefer, chef and owner of Black Dinah Chocolates and author of Deserted, Recipes and Tales from an Island Chocolatier. Again, the number, 1-800-399-3566. So you decide, you know, what the heck, let's go for it. And then you started to what, just sort of experiment a bit in the kitchen and learn from your failures?
Basically, yeah. I got into the kitchen and started screwing up over and over and over and over again. And in the downtime when I wasn't working on chocolate, Steve and I were working on a business plan. We got business counseling from Women Business Center of Maine and CEI, really built up a business plan, did a lot of market research, ate a lot of chocolate. and eventually I started having more successes than I had failures in the kitchen.
The business plan, I assume this all rested on being a mail order business. Your plan was not to put a few, you know, boxes in boutiques around northern New England.
Right. Well, yeah, because no one would buy it, you know. I mean, there is a lot of really great chocolate in the United States right now, in New England, and particularly in Maine. Really, really great chocolate being made. And you know, to start something in such a remote location where nobody knows where it is and nobody knows who you are with no reputation to go along with it is pretty risky. So we couldn't just send it out and expect people to buy it.
So you knew as part of your business thinking that there was a lot of competition. Was there a niche or a gap that you thought you would be able to fill, or were you just joining the group?
Yes and no. We knew that a big part of our product was the story behind it. Once I felt confident that I could make an excellent piece of chocolate, we started developing the story that went with it. And it sort of writes itself. It's pretty obvious.
So Ailaho, mm-hmm. and the Maine made label and the story and the book were really a part of your thinking from the beginning.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as an outsider coming into Maine and then on to Ailaho, I mean, of course, everybody who lives on Ailaho knows what a wonderful place it is. But coming there as an outsider, it blows you away. the first time you walk on the island. It is paradise. And I really wanted to communicate that through this particular product. And that's really what we tried to do. We wanted to capture people's imagination with our packaging, with opening it up and having this surprise come from somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
But don't undersell the sort of the quality of the product itself.
Absolutely. I mean,
that's what seems to be what you're recognized for, is that when you eat one, it's really good.
Right. And we wouldn't have gone forward until we had it right, you know. So that was key at the beginning.
And so how did it take a while to catch on? I mean, describe the sort of the business arc.
Oh, you mean as far as demand goes?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
right. It's like, oh, I don't know what you're saying.
Okay. I get that a lot, so don't worry.
Did it take a while to catch on? Yes. Steve likes to tease me all the time. The first summer we opened, we had a cafe, and I was the only one working there. And he would come home from work, and I would be had fallen asleep on the front lawn waiting for people to come in. So, yes, it did take a while. But the cafe filled a need in our community, I think. People wanted a place to gather, to sit down and have a cup of coffee and play a game. And once people started coming in, seeing the chocolate in the case, associating that, telling visitors that came on the boat about it, them coming, associating the chocolate with this fabulous hike they had on Ailaho, you know, in June, them thinking about that in December when they're getting ready to buy holiday gifts, then it really started to feed on itself.
Was there one point in the process when you came up with a little square piece of chocolate, a particular combination, and you thought, wow, I really nailed this one?
Yes, it happens every time I make it. It really does. It's never rote. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite of your own?
I do. It changes. I sort of have a rotation of favorites. But yes, I definitely have a favorite. Do you want to know what it is?
Oh, yes.
Okay. It's the varietal. It's a Peruvian chocolate. And it is like nothing else I've ever had. I think it's the best chocolate in the world, what we start with, and then we make it into a truffle, which is amazing.
Yeah. Let's take our first call, and we go to Mike in Santa Cruz, California. Long way away, Mike. Welcome to the program.
Hey, glad to be here.
Yeah. What's your question?
Hey, Kate, I was wondering, I know you work closely with your husband. How do you two come up with your flavors?
It usually starts with Steve having a cup of yesterday's coffee, which is sitting cold on the counter, and picking up a peanut butter cookie that maybe our neighbor Lisa Turner made and dipping it in the cup of coffee and taking a bite and say, hey, Kate, this tastes really, really good. You should try it. And I'll wrinkle up my nose and say, ew, that's gross. I don't know why you like that. And then I'll try it and it's great. So Steve comes up with a lot of the ideas.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, you're welcome.
1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Twitter, you can tweet us at Maine Calling or leave a message on our Facebook page. Kate Schaefer, chef and owner of Black Dinah Chocolates, author of Deserted, Recipes and Tales from an Island Chocolatier. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we want to hear from you. And we're going to hear a little bit more about how you make these chocolates. Stay with us.
The protests that led to the Egyptian Revolution were organized in part by an anonymous Facebook page administrator. When the police found out who he was, they arrested and interrogated him. Now, Wael Ghanim is internationally famous. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with him about his new memoir, Revolution 2.0. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
Thank you. Next time on the New York Philharmonic this week, Yefim Bronfman is the soloist in Prokofiev's Second Piano Concerto. Hello, this is Alec Baldwin. Please join me for this concert from the orchestra's 2010 European tour. Also on the program, Expo by composer-in-residence Magnus Lindberg and the Symphony No. 2 by Sibelius. Music director Alan Gilbert will conduct the New York Philharmonic this week.
The New York Philharmonic this evening at 8, following Fresh Air.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. On today's program, Chocolate, Chocolate, and More Chocolate. With me in the studio, Kate Schaefer. She's a nationally recognized chocolatier who, along with her husband, own and operate Black Dinah Chocolatier. She's the author of Deserted, Recipes and Tales from an Island Chocolatier. To join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Let's start back at the beginning in terms of the process of making chocolate. And the first important step is to pick chocolate. Mm. How do you do that?
Well, people do it different ways. The way we did it was, I basically went out and bought every bar of chocolate off the shelf at Rooster Brother in Ellsworth and brought it back. And we invited everyone who was on the island, which wasn't that many people. I think it was in January or February, and had a taste test. And we tallied up the results, and there was a winner. And that's what we went by.
And this is, I mean, what we're talking about in terms of the chocolate, is it really dark? Is it bittersweet? Yep. Where does it live on the...
Sure. So we had a set of criteria. It had to be sustainably grown. It had to be made from cocoa beans that were fairly traded. We really wanted a single origin chocolate. That's a chocolate that's produced and grown in the same place. So we use a bittersweet chocolate. Our couverture, which is what we cover everything in, is 60%. The chocolate that we make, our ganache, that's the center of a truffle, is 72%. And then we also do a milk chocolate and a white chocolate.
We have a listener, Sally Oliver, who writes to us, "Dark chocolate, exclamation marks. Milk chocolate is simply insipid sweetness."
Well, it's amazing to me that everyone has a very strong opinion about chocolate. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Chocolat, but Vian Rocher, who's the chocolatier in that movie, is... her secret talent is guessing what somebody's favorite is. And everybody has a favorite. And it's always something different.
Mm. So you pick the chocolate, and then you bring it home, and now you're going about the business of making, things like truffles, for example. And truffles refers to what? It's the shape of the...
Well, yeah. I mean, that's how it got its name. The traditional shape is a round piece of ganache coated in cocoa powder. And so it looks like the truffle you pull out of the ground. But a truffle, in actuality, in confectionery, is basically chocolate ganache, which is a mixture of chocolate and cream.
And that makes it sort of tricky, doesn't it? It's sort of keeping the cream and the chocolate chemically living together happily without breaking apart.
That's right.
That's sort of the knack.
You sound like you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Believe me, I do not. But I did read this with interest because, this is the process of tempering chocolate in the kitchen, which is, as we said at the top of the program, which is so important. And that's maintaining the temperature so that it stays in this state.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that important?
Well, it's important because we want to have a finished product that looks as good as it tastes. And the only way to do that is to have all of the fat crystals in the chocolate in perfect alignment with each other. It's the only way to do it, unless you're working with something that's not real chocolate. So that's why it's important.
All right. We're going to see if we can help Sally from Richmond out with a question along these lines. Hi, Sally. Welcome to the program.
Thank Thank you.
Hi, Sally.
It's wonderful.
Oh, good. Are you having difficulty with...
When I make fudge in the winter and it's a damp and foggy day, my fudge doesn't set. Does she have any trouble with the foggy days on Isla Ho?
Absolutely. We started in our home kitchen and we had no climate control whatsoever in there. On humid days, it would take my ganache a long time to set, sometimes days, sometimes not at all. And the reason why, Sally, is because, well, one of the reasons why, is because there is sugar in your fudge, of course, and sugar is hygroscopic. It absorbs moisture out of the air. And so what's happening as it's sitting there on your counter is that it's just getting, you know, it's like a sponge. It's just getting wetter and wetter.
Is there anything that, what do you do to, you can't change, well, I guess you can change the humidity in your kitchen, or but for those who can't, are there workarounds to keep control?
Well, I used to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and work then. But you can try setting it in the refrigerator. That's a tricky proposition. Or, you know, sort of the magic about confectionery is that you do depend on the environment around you. And maybe pick a less humid day to work.
We have a listener writing in and wondering how you come up with ideas for different flavors, including incorporation of Earl Grey, for example. Is that just experimentation?
A lot of it is experimentation, and some of it is I had an Earl Grey truffle once that I really, really loved and wanted to recreate it. So I definitely get ideas from other confectioners and other recipes.
Jesse has a question also writing in. Says, hi, Kate, I find white chocolate really frustrating to work with. Mm. When I want to drizzle it melted on Christmas cookies, for example, it doesn't behave well. Can you explain why and offer solutions?
Well, I'd be curious just how exactly it's not behaving well. But yes, lots of people get frustrated with white chocolate. The thing
what is different about white chocolate? Is it the milk powder? Or?
Well, yeah. So there's milk. So white chocolate, real white chocolate. And that's the first thing I would check on your label is that you're using white chocolate made with cocoa butter, okay? Not any other kind of vegetable fat. So white chocolate is cocoa butter, milk powder, vanilla, and sugar, okay? And usually there's some sort of emulsifying agent in it, like soy lecithin, most commonly. White chocolate has a much lower... what's the word I'm looking for? You need to melt it at a lower temperature. You can't heat it up as much as, say, bittersweet chocolate. And it burns a lot faster because it does have more sugar and milk in it. So make sure that when you're melting it over warm water, not over direct heat. If you do that, it will melt. It'll clump. It'll never smooth out. And then stir it. Just keep stirring it. And it eventually will... It'll smooth out. If the problem you're having is that it's lumpy, just keep stirring it at that low, low temperature. Don't heat it above 105 degrees.
So you have to monitor it very carefully with the thermometer? Or can you do it by eye?
I would, if you're doing it for the first time, definitely use a, you don't have to use a candy thermometer. You can use a regular old kitchen thermometer. You know, just stick it in there. I have this great tool called a... refractometer. It's a red laser beam.
Oh,
it
wow.
takes the surface temperature of
anything.
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds like fun. So, and once it's up to temperature, you can work with it and do what you will with it. But it's also important to kind of bring it down out of that tempered state in an important way. Why is that? What happens if you, say, for example, just leave it out on the counter on a warm day?
Okay, so if you've melted it to like 105 degrees and you just let it sit, it'll set eventually. It won't set very quickly, but it'll set really dull or gray. It'll be crumbly and it just won't look very appetizing. It'll still taste great, but it doesn't look good.
So how do you? What do you do?
Sure.
Is it the fridge?
Well, you can. It will if you set it in the refrigerator. When you take it out, it'll still look gray. So we temper our chocolate. What we do is we take it from the melted temperature, say 105 or 110 degrees, and we add solid chocolate to it. This is what we call our seed chocolate. And we stir that chocolate into it until it comes down to about 88 degrees. And if we've done it correctly, and it's, you know, kind of a long process, then our chocolate, if we leave it out on the counter, will set with a beautiful sheen and a nice snap.
1-800-399-3566. Our guest is Kate Schaefer. And let's go to Gray and Wendy. Hi, Wendy. Welcome to the program.
Well, hello. Thank you for talking to me. I wanted to share a memory of my mother, who was the chocolate lady of Honolulu.
Oh, wow.
And lived on Oahu Island. And when they retired, she became the developed, as you're talking about, the business plan of how to do chocolate. And there was such a wonderful mystique to have chocolate in Honolulu, which is, of course, really hot. You have different environmental conditions there. And it was a real challenge for her to learn how to make chocolates that would survive in that environment. And she taught everyone in our family how to make chocolate. And in fact, she had a business. The business was really making, teaching people how to make chocolate.
Yeah, Wendy, do you carry that tradition forward?
Well, yes, we make chocolate on holidays. And my son just has a girlfriend in Italy, and he just sent her and her family a big box of chocolates. So yeah, our whole family will still make chocolates. We don't make them. I can tell by your conversation, we don't make the really elaborate ones like you do, but we'll make truffles and turtles and things like that. So we do really admire what you're saying and have a lot of respect for what you've accomplished, Aya.
All right, Wendy, thanks.
Thank you so much, Wendy.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bill from Freeport wants to know, Kate, how you managed to get the name and the business out on a national level from Isle of Ho. What was the marketing technique you used
there? Well, like most small business owners, when we started, our marketing budget was exactly zero. So we basically, our marketing plan, if you wanted to call it that, was to lure people to the island and then lure people into our cafe, where they would, of course, see these chocolates and want to associate them with this fabulous vacation they had on Isle of Ho. So that was the extent of our marketing plan. After that, we just got really, really, really lucky. People love the story, and we've had the very good fortune to be in a lot of national press and regional press, and get our story out basically for free.
1-800-399-3566 to Westbrook and Robin. Hi, Robin. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, Robin.
Hi. My question is, what are some of the more unusual orders that you've filled over your time? And in particular, I'm remembering reading something about sending chocolate frogs down to Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's the coolest place we've ever sent our chocolate. Last fall, we got a call from, I think it was the marketing director at the Smithsonian National Zoo, and they were giving a gala party for the release of their documentary on the amphibian crisis. And we had just come out with these chocolate frogs that we called frogleteers, and she wanted them to be served at this party for the release of this documentary. So that was a very cool story.
Yeah, Robin, thanks for calling. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions, and we'll do a little bit of a taste test.
Oh, good.
All right, stay with us.
Leonard Cohen's new CD is called Old Ideas. I'm Sarah Willis. Join me tonight on In Tune by 10. New music from Leonard Cohen and more here on MPBN Radio.
We find ourselves on different sides of a line nobody drew though it only be one in the higher.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the economy added nearly 250,000 jobs in January, but millions of Americans have been out of work for more than 6 months. Challenges for the long-term unemployed.
The Diane Rehm Show this afternoon at 2 o'clock.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Today on the program, just in time for Valentine's Day, Kate Schaefer, chocolatier and author of Deserted. Share your thoughts. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or send us a tweet at Maine Calling. Let's now go to the scene, Isla Ho, and we have a call from Paula. Hi, Paula. Paula, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, hi. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Paula.
Hi. Connor wants to ask a question.
Okay.
Oh.
Hi, Connor. Welcome. Okay. What's your question?
I was curious what chocolate's most popular.
Oh, okay. Well, it depends on who you're talking about, but I would say our most popular chocolate these days is our Peruvian varietal. That's the only way we have to judge it is by what gets bought in the cafe, but definitely that one and our Sexy Mexi truffle.
Wow. Well, Connor, guess what? On live radio, I'm going to try this particular confection. Let's see how it goes. Mmm. Wow. You're right. I think you have a good opinion. What is it? Help me. I'm not very sophisticated in describing taste profiles in chocolate. What is it that you think you've achieved in this, other than it's really delicious?
Well, I think the most thing I'm proud of in making a when I sit down and make a truffle, I don't actually sit down. I do it. I wish I did, but anyway, is the texture of it. And that one in particular has a very silky center. The kind of chocolate that we use, I talked about a little bit before, is a Peruvian chocolate, and it has a very floral taste to it. There's also some earth, and it's sweet without being sugary.
Yeah, it's but one would do me, I think, for
yes,
dessert.
You know? Absolutely, yeah. So. And that's, yeah, and I think that's a good sign.
Let's go to South Berwick and Callie. Hi, Callie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. This is a shout-out to my in-laws, who I hope are listening. But, Kate, your box of loving chocolate comes to me once a year from my mother-in-law, who, and I want to tell you that your marketing is working because they found out about you because we all used to vacation together on Isla Ho. And she often buys your chocolates and sends them out as gifts, and I get them once a year on my birthday. And in particular, this last year was really special because I've been ill, and it was just so nice to get those things from you, knowing they came from Isla Ho and from my in-laws.
Oh, thank you so much. That is really nice of you to share. Thank you.
And Callie, there are lots of chocolates on the market, as we discussed. What's different about these?
Well, I think it's what Kate was saying, is that silky. But first of all, the combination of different flavors. And I like to think of myself a little bit as a chocolate connoisseur. one of the things is that they're really interesting combination of flavors, particularly the, you know, using maybe... I can't remember. It's like a hot.
The ancho chili.
Yes, the chili the chili one or the Peruvian one. So they really interesting combinations of flavors, but also the texture is really, really cool and really different than other ones. And they are the richest flavor without being too rich that you can't have several in one sitting.
Excellent.
Yeah. Callie, thank you so much for calling us today.
Thanks so much for letting me speak.
Thank you.
A listener, Eva, says, Hi, Kate. A lot of smaller Maine's smaller islands have shrinking populations, and we hear a lot about how people should start small businesses on the islands, but it's a big economic risk. Did you have to borrow or invest a scary amount of money to get started, or were you able to start small and grow gradually?
We bootstrapped the entire operation from what we were making at our day jobs. And we did not take out a loan for 4 years until we decided that we had outgrown our tiny home kitchen and needed to build a commercial production space. So, no, we didn't have to spend a whole lot of money. You have to expect higher expenses. I mean, to get stuff to the island is expensive, electricity, et cetera.
Eva is actually writing to us from Matinicus, yes. So she knows of what she speaks. But she says, is there something you could say to encourage people to go out on a limb and start trying their own island businesses?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a myth that works and also a myth that doesn't work for us is that we're sort of, you know, away from everything. We're not. We have high-speed internet access. We've had it for 6 years. We obviously have phones, electricity. We have a lot of things that can make a business go and grow. And especially now that people can work remotely from islands to a bigger job on the mainland, I think the risk has gone down.
All right. 1-800-399-3566 to Tim in Portland. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Yeah, go ahead.
I am a former chef, and I did mostly I didn't really deal with sweets a whole lot, but at one time I experimented with making a chocolate sushi roll.
Ooh.
I made a white chocolate cake and covered it with simple syrup and then rolled it up with some amaretto pears and raspberries. And I had difficulty working with the chocolate, with dark chocolate to cover it. And I was wondering if Ms. Schaefer might have some advice for working with chocolate in that respect.
So what was the particular difficulty that you were having?
Just getting something to a consistency where I could effectively roll it up and make a, you know, I ended up with something more ovular than circular. So it was, a little bit difficult to use the dark chocolate to, you know, essentially roll a sushi roll.
Okay, so you were rolling like a sheet of chocolate around it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I tried mixing it, you know, with some cornstarch and some confectioner sugar to make it a little bit more pliable, but I never really got to the point where I was entirely satisfied with it.
Yeah.
Tasty, but didn't look the way I envisioned.
Yeah, I would say check out, I wish I could remember the name of the book, but there's a way to make sort of a chocolate clay, and it involves using corn syrup and chocolate. If you mix corn syrup and chocolate together, this isn't the sort of work I do, but if you mix those two ingredients together, then you get a pliable sheet of chocolate.
Excellent.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
Let's go. Another call from Isle of Hope. Michael, hi. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead. What's your question?
I'm wondering how you put on the designs.
Ah.
Yeah, some of these, just to explain, your chocolates have these really intricate and beautiful designs on the top of them. So it's a visual experience as well.
Well, I know for a fact that Michael is calling from the Isle of Ho School, and he has been into the cafe many, many times asking me this question, and I've always say it's magic. however, I'll tell you the secret. It's actually something called a cocoa butter transfer. And it's a piece of acetate, which is a pliable piece of plastic. And on it is printed cocoa butter that has been colored. And when you place that piece of plastic on the surface of wet chocolate, that's chocolate before it sets, the cocoa butter, the colored cocoa butter, bonds with the cocoa butter in the chocolate itself so that when it sets, you can peel off the plastic and the cocoa butter will remain on the surface. It's very, very cool.
Well, it's very scientific. Mm-hmm. And where else on the radio are you going to learn about cocoa butter transfer than right here? Michael, thank you for calling. Let's go to Sue in Freeport. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Sue, hello. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I came in a little late on the program. I don't know if this question was answered.
Why the name? How did you choose the name of your business and your chocolates?
Yeah, that's an excellent question and one that we get asked a lot. The name comes from a mountain on Idaho, or I call it a mountain. It's more like a big rock. And it's we live at the base of Black Dinah Mountain.
How is that spelled?
Well, we originally it's spelled D-I-N-A, but we changed the spelling for our purposes to D-I-N-A-H.
Black Dinah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Sue. Thanks for clarifying that. I probably should have gotten that at some point. Jeremiah is in Portland. Hi, Jeremiah.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, Kate.
Hi.
I got to say, I was introduced to your chocolate at the Stonington Farmers Market 3 or 4 years ago, so I've been a big fan since. And being from the island, I got to say, I got to give you props for being away and residing in a small community like you do and having a successful business. Got your book for Christmas. Love it. And I want to say good luck.
Thank you so much.
Good. Thanks for calling, Jeremiah. Betty loves Kate's chocolates, but wants to know if she could ever label the ones in the box so people know what they're eating.
Yeah. So actually, Betty, every box does come with a list of possible chocolates that could be in there. On our farm market collection, we actually have pictures that go with it. And we're talking about redesigning our insert for our classic collection to have pictures so people have less problems identifying. I, however, wrote all those descriptions, so they all are perfectly clear to me, but it's good to know that that there is some mystery.
And before we run out of time, we want to make sure that people obviously can go to your website for information, but where can they buy chocolates for in advance of Valentine's Day in Maine?
In Maine. Well, in Maine, if you live in Maine, you can still call us to order. Our number's 207-335-5010. Also, you can go to any of our retail partners. Should I list them?
Sure, really quickly.
If there are too many,
if we don't get to that, we can always go to your website.
And they are all linked on our website. In the Portland area, LaRue Kitchen and Brown Trading Market. And I'll be at Brown Trading Market tonight doing a chocolate and wine pairing. And then up the coast, Treats, Rising Tide Community Market in Damariscotta, the Blue Hill Co-op in Blue Hill, Fairwinds Florist, the Cave in Brooklyn, and the Seasons of Stonington and Stonington. I know I've forgotten quite a few, but you can go to our website.
All right, Kate, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Kate Schaefer.
What fun.
It was fun. It was a nice special treat I don't usually get either. Kate Schaefer, chef and author of Deserted, Recipes and Tales from an Island Chocolatier. She and her husband own and operate Black Dinah Chocolatier. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. John Keimel ran the board. Our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. We also had help from Rich Tozier and the MPBN web team. You can listen to this conversation and previous editions of Maine Calling by visiting mpbn.net and click on the radio tab. Tuesday on the program, the debate over gay marriage in Maine. I'm Keith Shortall, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.